The White Wolf rests, but the future of one of gaming's most beloved sagas is anything but quiet. We are talking, of course, about The Witcher.
Specifically, the new chapter, Project Polaris.
Exactly. And this isn't just a sequel. It feels like the most ambitious internal reset CD Projekt Red has ever attempted.
Matt.
Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today we're diving into the sources you shared, which pull from some really detailed analyses of that one official image and the ongoing development reports.
There's a lot to unpack from just that one image.
There is, and our mission for you today is pretty clear. To map out how CD Projekt Red is redefining the core mechanics, the engine, and, well, the very canon of the Witcher universe.
Because the big theme here is that this won't just be The Witcher 3 with better graphics. Not at all.
No. The studio is betting everything on this being a fundamental redefinition of the open world RPG genre itself. So I guess, where do we even begin with all this?
We have to start with the only thing they've actually shown us. That single cryptic image of a medallion half buried in the snow.
Right.
It holds the entire philosophy of this new game.
And that medallion immediately tells a story that separates this new chapter from Geralt's era. It's officially confirmed to be the symbol of the School of the Lynx.
Which just shattered years of speculation.
It really did. So if we connect that to the lore, what does that shift mean? We know the School of the Wolf, Geralt's school?
Right. The Wolf School was all about resilience, direct swordsmanship, and, you know, a moderate use of signs. They were essentially brawlers, tank-like fighters who relied on endurance and their steel.
And the Lynx. A Lynx is anything but a tank. It's the ultimate ambush predator.
Precisely. The sources are all suggesting that this Lynx philosophy will force a complete tactical overhaul. We're probably deprioritizing the fast-paced hack-and-slash pirouettes of the last game.
So less dancing with swords.
Much less. Instead, the core mechanics will likely revolve around stealth, extreme agility, and calculated trap usage. The idea is that the Witcher stalks the monster, studies it, and strikes when the odds are stacked in their favor, not just, you know, running in.
That sounds like a completely different combat rhythm. I mean, I'm used to drawing my sword and immediately getting into a whirlwind of attacks. How does that translate to fighting, say, a massive griffin? Does a stealth-first approach still feel satisfying?
Well, it forces you to rely on the environment. You can't exactly stealth a griffin in the traditional sense, but you can absolutely ambush it.
Okay.
The Lynx philosophy suggests using signs differently, maybe to push it off a cliff ledge or setting up a whole series of traps with bombs and Jurtenglyphs before you even engage. It shifts the player from being a medieval swordmaster to a genuine tactical hunter, someone who controls the battlefield before the fight even begins.
And that tactical approach, it extends to the world itself, right?
Yeah.
Especially with all the snow in that teaser image. A Lynx is a master of the cold.
And that's the introduction of what the sources are calling cold mechanics. This isn't just for looks. The snow implies the elements will actively become an antagonist.
So we're moving beyond just pretty weather cycles.
Way beyond. Think about having to manage insulation, maybe food and warmth, and fighting the deep freeze. It's similar to those realism systems in games like Red Dead Redemption 2.
Fighting a monster is one thing, but fighting frostbite at the same time.
Yeah.
That really raises the tension.
It does, and that environmental factor connects to the most significant lore change here. We have to talk about the canon.
Right.
The School of the Lynx. It doesn't actually exist in the original books. It was popular fan fiction.
Wait, really? So by confirming the medallion, CDPR is definitively establishing its own canon.
That's a massive power move, isn't it? They are taking the reins of the future of the Witcher saga.
They really are.
We're looking at a future forged by a splinter group, probably established after the events of The Witcher 3, maybe by Ciri or another surviving Witcher looking for a new path. It confirms they're moving beyond Geralt's story and building something that can support decades of new stories.
And to realize a new canon with such different mechanics and challenges, the studio had to confront its biggest internal problem.
The ghost in the machine. The technology.
Yeah.
Look, veterans know The Witcher 3 was a beautiful painting, but you couldn't really touch the canvas. Their own technology redemption, it had limitations.
The physics were notoriously janky. Everyone remembers Roach standing on the roof of a shack.
Ah, the charming jankiness. We loved it, but it definitely prevented that feeling of true systemic interaction.
It did.
Exactly. Reed Engine was built for those stunning but fundamentally static worlds. To get the kind of interactivity they need for the Lynx agile combat and those environmental challenges, they had to make the strategic probably painful but necessary shift to Unreal Engine 5.
Okay, let's unpack that, because this is where the game fundamentally changes. Moving to UE5 isn't just about better textures, it unlocks entirely new ways to design a world. Let's start with the two core technologies driving this.
First one, the big one, is Nanite.
Right.
In older games, the world is built using repeating textures and simplified models to save on processing power. So you see the same rock, the same tree stump, copied dozens of times.
We call that asset reuse. Nanite pretty much ends that. It allows for the virtual equivalent of infinite geometric detail without the huge performance cost. In the old system, the engine had to render every single pixel on every object, which bogged things down.
So what does that mean for me as the player walking through this world?
It means that every single cobblestone on a city road, every shard of ice on a mountain, every piece of moss on a cliff can potentially be unique. It's fully rendered geometry, not just a flat texture. It dramatically increases how real the world feels.
That level of detail sounds almost overwhelming. How does that change how you even design a level if you don't have to worry about repeating assets?
It lets them lean completely into environmental storytelling. If we're exploring deep, ancient elven mines, Nanite allows for unique geological formations and tunnels for miles underground. They don't have to use the same cave models over and over. Every chamber can feel distinct, forcing the player to adapt, which is crucial for a stealth-focused Witcher.
And then there's Lumen, which sounds like it completely changes the mood and, more importantly, the gameplay, especially for a Lynx prowling in the dark far north.
Lumen handles global illumination. Think of oldie games where light was baked. It was pre-calculated and static. If you moved a torch, the shadow stayed mostly the same because they were, like, painted onto the environment.
So Lumen is like taking a real flashlight into that room instead.
Precisely. Lumen renders light bounce in real time. If you cast the Ignis sign inside a deep, dark cave, the fire won't just glow weakly. Its light will bounce dynamically off the walls, realistically filling the space, casting accurate shadows.
So I might actually miss a hidden ledge or a monster in the shadows because the lighting isn't static anymore.
Exactly. This dynamic lighting is key. It makes night exploration genuinely terrifying. You won't just rely on your minimap. You will need to use potions like Cat to see properly. It makes the alchemy, the whole preparation part of being a Witcher, essential again.
It sounds like the engine itself is forcing us back into that core Witcher routine. And that discipline will be tested by the living world they're building. Which ties into the next big prediction. The game director, Sebastian Kalemba, keeps using the word groundbreaking.
And the sources suggest this points to a deep ecosystem simulation.
This feels like a huge leap from the old system.
It is. It connects directly to why the Lynx has to be a stalker. In The Witcher 3, monsters were basically static targets waiting for you in a marker. With UE5, we expect a truly living, evolving environment.
Smarter monsters, basically.
Much smarter. Griffins might actively hunt deer for food, and you might see the remains of that hunt miles away. Drowners could actually migrate from one river to another based on weather patterns. Monster locations might not even be fixed anymore. They're tied to a regional food chain.
This means the Witcher's role has to change. You're no longer just a warrior who shows up and swings a sword. You have to become an ecologist.
That's the perfect word for it. The preparation phase becomes just as important as the fight. You'll be forced to track footprints in the snow, check the wind direction to hide your scent, and use that ecological knowledge as a weapon. If you ignore it, you might miss the monster entirely because it migrated.
How does that shift from warrior to ecologist affect the game's structure? Are the quests going to be different?
They absolutely should be. If the ecosystem is simulated, your decisions have real weight. Killing a certain apex predator might cause a population explosion of a lesser monster. A quest could become less about kill the beast and more about manage the imbalance.
A slower, more methodical hunt. I like that.
Exactly.
And where is all this taking place? We're leaving the muddy swamps of Velen behind. The Lynx points us decisively toward the far north.
We're heading into the largely unexplored nations of Kovir and Povis. They were only mentioned in past games, but they're known for their immense wealth from deep mines, their powerful mages, and their strict neutrality in all the southern wars.
A richer political tapestry. That's fascinating. It suggests we'll be dealing with complex diplomacy, not just choosing between two warring kings.
And physically, the setting is unique. The capital, Pont Venice, is described as a Venice of the North.
Venice of the North.
Famous for its canals that freeze solid in winter. Imagine a city built around a massive frozen water network. A fantastic backdrop for stealth and exploration.
And this region is mountainous, unlike the flat plains around Novigrad. That implies a totally different feel to the map.
It must. This strongly suggests the introduction of vertical exploration. We're anticipating robust climbing mechanics, maybe something like Breath of the Wild, and deep, maybe procedural dungeon crawling through those ancient elven mines.
Okay, all these changes, the combat, the ecosystem, this new vertical world, it all begs the biggest question on everyone's mind. Who is wearing that Lynx medallion? Ciri. Or a new custom character.
This is the fiercest debate right now, because Geralt was so iconic. But if we look at the data, specifically the taking game theory your sources mention, the momentum is heavily favoring a custom character, a create a witcher.
But wait, what about the emotional weight? We love Geralt's sarcasm and his defined personality. Won't a blank slate witcher lack that core?
That's a valid concern, and it's why the debate is so heated. But the argument for a custom character has two major pillars. First is player agency. We've seen with Baldur's Gate 3 and even Cyberpunk 2077 that modern players want to inhabit their own avatar.
True. But the more compelling reason is the power problem you mentioned. Ciri is the established hero.
She is. By the end of The Witcher 3, Ciri is basically a demigod who can manipulate time and space. Trying to design a balanced progression system for a character that powerful is a design nightmare. How do you create challenge when she can just teleport out of danger?
It neuters the whole RPG progression.
It completely neuters it. So the solution is to reset the power curve with a rookie Lynx Witcher.
But then where's Ciri in all this?
It's far more likely she'll take on the mentor role. She'll be the Vesemir of the story. The Grandmaster who established the school and guides the rookie. It lets them keep her in the story without having to deal with her being completely overpowered.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Okay, before we get to the timeline, we have to address the elephant in the room. The hard lessons from the launch of Cyberpunk 2077. The studio is clearly fighting to regain its honor here.
That is absolutely critical context. Their internal approach has changed entirely. The sources confirm they've adopted a more agile methodology. So, iterative development, constant testing, not the old crunch and polish model.
A commitment to stability, it sounds like.
It is. They are no longer building fake demos just for E3, and that strategic partnership with Epic Games ensures the Unreal Engine is stable from day one. They are trying to avoid the technical disasters of the past.
So let's bring it home. The latest official data point is that Project Polaris has officially entered full production. Over 400 developers, the bulk of the studio are on it. What does that mean for you waiting at home? Should you get ready to pre-order?
Not yet. Given the typical 4-year cycle for a AAA game on a new engine, the sources predict you should not expect a release before late 2027 or early 2028.
That's a patient wait.
It's a realistic one. But 2026 will likely be the year we start seeing those first major gameplay trailers and lore drops.
That feels like the right way to do it.
Yeah.
So to summarize this whole deep dive, the White Wolf rests, but the Lynx is prowling. The Witcher 4 promises a faster, smarter, and deadlier type of Witcher in a world that is colder, has richer politics, and is populated by much smarter monsters. We'll leave you with this provocative thought based on that ecosystem data. If the Witcher has to become an ecologist to survive, what happens when a contract requires them to destroy a key part of the food chain? Does the contract killer suddenly become a conservationist? What stands out to you?